So we welcome all the participants for our this month's seminar entitled How to Control Your Own Destiny. Is it loud enough? You are able to hear me? How many of you are coming for the very first time? Okay, most of you. How many of you are coming for the second time? So before I begin in trying to explore into our own destinies, I guess it would be wise enough to first control our cell phones before we try to control our destinies. So I request all of you to take out your cell phones and put them on the silent mode. If in case you do not know how to put it on the silent mode, we have people who can help you out. Now this particular topic is quite interesting, and when I thought about it, and when people came to know that there is going to be a seminar on a topic like this, the first question which many of them, I guess many of you also might have had this question: can we really control our destiny? Is it really possible to control our destiny? Well, all of you are over here. Is it a stroke of destiny? Or is it by chance? Or is it your choice? Saturday evening, September, is considered to be one of the most best months for the climate. As far as the climate is concerned, to enjoy, you could have gone to a movie, you could have gone to some park, some enjoyment place, pub, disco, tech. What else? Nasik is advanced like Bombay or degraded like Bombay? Whatever, I don't know. So all of you chose to come here, which means that you want to work upon or change your destiny to some extent. Now, mind, my dear friends, that today I'm not going to become like a fortune teller for all of you, that I'm going to look into your palm and change the lines of your palm or your destiny on your forehead. As this gentleman looks, his furrows looks a little tensed up. So, it's not going to happen that as you walk out of this room, you know, all of these things will be changed in your life, and you would have those things which you had desired just dawn upon you, fall upon you. Over here, we are trying to see how we can manage and control the given situation which is there in front of us in our own hands. Like one time a man, he went to a fortune teller. You know what a fortune teller means? Jyotish. So he went to a Jyotishi. And then, you know, generally they just pull out their palm and want to know the future. So the fortune teller started telling. He was very minutely looking at the palm, and he said that 10 years from now, heavy loss in business. So he became very concerned, the man. He said, and after that? Then again he looked into the palm and he said, 10 years after that, you'll have a stormy family life, crisis. Wife is going to leave you. He was a little having mixed feelings about that, a little happy also. But then he said, 10 years That's going to happen. Which means 10 years, business crashes down. 10 years down that line, family. What next? Again. 10 years after that, health crisis. You're going to get a terminal disease. 30 years gone like that. And then he asked, what's next? Then he said, then you'll get used to. So many times when we talk of destiny or try to know about our destiny, it's in this fashion that we are just told that just get used to, you know, whatever life you have in your hands. You know, it's like literally the destiny is written. Some people say the destiny is written in these lines. Now, when we are dealing with something so abstract, with something so supernatural, something beyond us, what we may not clearly know, and also what we cannot deny that it doesn't exist. We cannot pin it down and say that, yes, this is my destiny, and we can't say that it's all just hocus pocus, it's all just bogus, there is nothing called destiny. You are the one. The man is the maker of his destiny. And man is the breaker of his destiny. Is it right or is it wrong? Well, the response was not so enthusiastic. It's right, okay. Oh. He's the maker of his destiny. That's it? Not the breaker? Okay, so we'll see how this works upon. Now, beginning with, how do we define it? Yes, you may have a certain definition of what, according to you, destiny is all about. I might have my definition of what destiny is all about. Okay, let's take the standard definition, what people call it, the dictionary. Those events that will necessarily happen to a particular person or thing in the future. Quite easy to understand. Then, something very interesting. The hidden power believed to control what will happen in the future. Now, herein what we understand is that we all know that there is some power which is waiting for us in the future. Sometimes we think there is someone waiting for us in the future. Koi na koi, kabhi na kabhi, kahi na kahi to aayega. Like that, you know, we are hoping against hope that there would be someone. Either it would be my dream girl or my dream boy or my dream situation, my dream job, my dream car, my dream house. And many times, life just passes in those dreams. Well, it is said that, you know, the best way to make your dreams come true? Wake up. We have to just wake up. Yeah, then the beginning of the dreams to come true will begin. So, okay, let's, any objections on this definition or any additions anyone would like to add on? In regards to, yes, of course, people might have their viewpoints. So, we can, every viewpoint is valued and valid. So, begin with this definition, having the premise. Many times what happens is, in life, we become expert jugglers. As you see, this gentleman is trying to juggle between so many different aspects of his life. Or maybe an office-going person or a working man, a practical man of this real world is trying to juggle so many things and looks like he's getting somewhere in this juggling. He's becoming successful. It looks like it's quite synchronized. It looks like he's good at that. So many times, we try to juggle so many situations in our life, our home life, family life, social life, official life, personal life, spiritual life. And we try to juggle, and sometimes, to some extent, we are successful. And then we get hold of the situation. And then we think, I am the doer. Yes, I can do it. I am the one. I am the one appointed for this situation. And sometimes when we are not able to juggle things properly in our life, then depression, anxiety, tension, stress, the list goes on and on and on. And many times, when situations go beyond us, forget about not trying to juggle properly, but when situations go beyond us, then the finger goes up. Us Bhagavan ne mere saath kyon kiya aisa? Duniya banane wale. Then the question comes, why do bad things happen to me? I'm such a nice person. I was born a saint. I was born a virtuous man with so many good qualities and attributes. What wrong did I do? Yes, I might not be, you know, a great prophet, but I'm not a sinner also. So this question, how many times this question props up in our life, in our consciousness? Why do bad things happen to good people? It's a very interesting question, is it not? But you know something? This is the title of a book, a well-acclaimed book written by this gentleman, Harold Kushner. And this is the title of the book. This is the cover page of the book. When bad things happen to good people. Now this gentleman, now he's writing about God in this book, and it kind of blaming God, playing that blame game. But if you know the background of this person, Harold Kushner, he himself, he was a devout Christian. He was a priest, full time, just living a life based on the Holy Scriptures, Bible. Living a life like that, preaching about those teachings of Jesus Christ. So how come a person who was so much God's man could write a book entitled like this? Something very interesting transpired in his life. His 7-year-old son died of a very peculiar disease called progeria. Now, progeria is a disease when a person starts to age prematurely. Like he's 10 years old and there are symptoms in his body of a person who is 60 years old. That's called progeria. Very unique disease. Sometimes people, you know, even if disease they want some very unique and interesting disease so that they can tell to people, hey, I have progeria. Kuch dam hai, naam mein bhi kuch dam hai. Of course, Harold Kushner was not so happy. So his 7-year-old son died of this disease, progeria, when he was, you know, just a little lad. And Harold Kushner then started to think, why this thing happened. He started to analyze the situation. And in his analysis, he wrote this book, in which he's not saying that I become an atheist, I deny the existence of God. No, he's not decrying the existence of God. He's saying that yes, he does exist, but there are some limitations to him. God, after all, you know, he has to manage this big, huge universe. So he has to manage so many people and situations and planets and galaxies. You know, after all, he's just one man. We should give him some respite. We should, you know, give him some relaxation. any government, you can expect files gets misplaced. So even God's government, there might be some flaws. So he came to this conclusion in this book, the essence of what the book is all about. God is called omniscient. Omniscient means he knows everything. He is all knowledgeable. God is called omnipotent, which means he has all the potency. He is almighty, all powerful. These are some common definitions of God. Sarvagya, Sarvashaktiman. Then he says, he might be omnipotent, but he might not be all merciful. Otherwise, how did his merciful heart allow my 7-year-old son to die of that disease? That to my son. There are so many crooks, rogues and rascals, and their sons are having the pink of the health. Why my son had to die like that? So he might be omniscient or omnipotent, but he might not be all merciful. He might be merciless, in fact, that he allowed this, or he might have done that. He might have given that disease. All merciful, maybe he might not know. So the conclusion which he draws out in this particular book is that we have put unlimited faith on a limited God. Appears to be quite an impressive statement. We have put unlimited faith, blind faith, andha shraddha, they call it. But we should know that he is limited. So therefore, unless we know the situation in a quite categorical way, that what is this world made up of? What am I made up of? What are the situations which come in my life? What are the reasons behind them? And many times, we only analyze the immediate situation in front of us. Now, when good things happen, like we have a nice real life incident in this regard, when people start playing the blame game. Now you see, when these incidents take place, familiar? The tsunami, the 9/11 catastrophe. This is the month 9/11 took place, this crash, the WTC. Now, when such incidents, they take place, people, then, you know, the discussions are about destiny, about God, providence, fortune. What's all this going on? Now, immediately, this game is played by the general masses, called the blame game. So we have a nice historical account to this. You know this gentleman, Arthur Ashe? Anyone knows who was this person? Yeah. He was a famous champion tennis player. He had won the Wimbledon many times. And he was quite a renowned figure in the circuit, the tennis circuit. You know how he died? He died of AIDS. And he had so many fans because quite talented, such a champion player. It so happened that one of the fans asked him this question. Why you? Why did God choose you of all people for this disease? Why you had to die of this disease? Again, there are so many people who are parasites on this planet Earth, not required at all. Good for nothing. You know, this disease God could have given to them. You are my favorite tennis player. Why? Why did God do this? Why to you only? So this was, you know, like the loud question in the letter which he wrote. Why you? Why you? And, you know, reading that letter, Arthur Ashe could hear, why me? Why me? Like that. So his answer was quite profound. He began his answer. In fact, there were many letters which he had received because he was terminally so ill and he had only some few months to live, and he had received so many letters from his fans. But this one letter, he personally answered. He wanted to answer. And the profound answer which he gave really something which was recorded in the books of history, in the books of wisdom. He began his answer saying, every year, all over the world, 50 crore people, they begin to play the game, begin to play tennis. Out of 50 crore, 5 lakh, only 5 lakh, they learn how to play. Out of 5 lakh, 50,000 learn professional tennis. Out of that, only 5,000 enter the Grand Slam. You know about the Grand Slam? The 4 events? Australian Open, US Open, Wimbledon, the French. Only 5,000, they qualify to enter the Grand Slam, you know, the grand events in tennis. Out of those 5,000, only 50 qualify for the most coveted of all events, the Wimbledon. Only 50 of them, they qualify. Out of 50, 4 reach the semifinals. I guess you know now. 2 reach the finals. And only 1 holds the trophy. And that year, it was Arthur Ashe who was holding the Wimbledon trophy. He says, I didn't ask this question to God. Why me? Well, he wrote this letter and he asked this fan of his, go and ask this question now. Why me? Why was I selected out of 50 crore in that year who started to learn how to play that particular game that year? So whenever good things happen, the finger never goes up that, yes, he's doing everything for me. The finger goes here. I am the one. I worked hard. I studied. I passed the exam. I got the degree. I got the job. I made the house. I am the controller of all I survey. But then, even if the nail comes out from the toe, why God? Why my nail has come out like that? Well, you bumped yourself in the rock. Why you put that rock? Why did you create that rock at the first place? Why did you create the nail at the first place? So God might say, okay, I'll remove it. When I remove it, you have complaints. When I put it, you have complaints. So therefore, when we are talking about this blame game which people are playing, let's, as some of you might be a little hungry, let's have some food for thought, beginning with that. Don't worry, we'll have for the stomach also, food for the stomach also. Begin with food for the thought. We must believe in luck, for how else can we explain the success of those we don't like? It's a real catchy one. Sometimes when you look into our own hearts, we realize that, you know, that Srila Prabhupada would tell this story that, you know, there was in a village, there was one small boy who was very intelligent and studied well, and he came out of the village, went to the city, then he became a lawyer, then a magistrate and the chief justice. But the other, his friends, you know, those still stayed in the village, they didn't want to believe. It's not that they didn't believe, they didn't want to believe that he has become the chief justice. So when they were told that, you know, your village chap has become the chief justice, come on, how can that happen? To langote hai yaar hamara goti khelta tha hamare sath. Okay, chief justice. He is, you know, they showed clippings, paper clippings, you know, he is, see his photo, the chief justice, he's been appointed. So then the villagers, you know, they said that, He might have been appointed as the chief justice. तनख्वाह नहीं मिलती होगी. So many times, you know, we start to maneuver, get into those aspects of luck, destiny, when the envy overpowers the mind and the heart. Not all luck is good, and not all good is luck. In the year 1994 in America, there was this one incident recorded by the FBI. This was a suicide case of one Mr. Ronald Opus. This gentleman, he jumped from a high-rise building from the terrace in order to commit suicide. He jumped. But it so happened that he didn't know that just, you know, it was a 20-story building, and just on the 18th floor there was a safety net. You know, the construction workers had put a safety net. They were, you know, refurbishing the building. So they had put a safety net. And he didn't know that there is a safety net just 2 floors below the terrace. So he landed on the safety net. Since it's a safety net, it was meant for the safety of somebody who would fall or trip from that building. So he was not supposed to be dead then. He wanted to die. He jumped for that reason. But still he was found dead on the safety net. That was surprising. Because what happened, as he was falling from the terrace, the 19th floor, as you know, his free fall reached 19th floor, someone from the 19th floor shot a bullet which coincided with his head. Can you believe that? It happened. Believe it or not, it happened. So as he is falling like this, the bullet is hitting his head from the 19th floor. So he reaches the safety net, totally his skull blasted off, dead. Then the FBI started to investigate that who was that person who shot that. They found that there was an old couple living in that particular apartment in the 19th floor, and that old man, the husband, had shot. So they caught hold of the husband that, why? Why did you do that? So he said, well, I didn't know. Yes, definitely it came from my gun. But I didn't know that there were bullets in that. What do you mean? It's your gun. You don't know. You shot it. You don't know the bullets are there in that? He said, no, I had this long-standing habit of threatening my wife with empty revolver. You know, I would keep the revolver at home, but never, I never even knew how to load it. Whenever my wife would go a little overboard, then I would threaten her, you know, by using that. This is something. So I had just the habit of having the empty gun, threatening her with that. I don't know who loaded. Who loaded? You don't know. How come? So then they started to investigate who loaded. So then they found that it was the son who loaded. And the son loaded the gun. Why? Because the mother had stopped the pocket money, monthly pocket money of the son. And the son was so annoyed with the mother that the son wanted to take revenge. But, you know, after all, there was some culture. He couldn't do that. So he knew that my father has this habit of threatening my mother with that gun. So I will just load it. My father will do the rest of the job. So he loaded. Now the police found that he was absconding. So they asked, now where is your son? They said, that's a good question. So then the investigations were, you know, and they were trying to find out, locate where the son. And finally, they came to the conclusion that the son was none other than Mr. Ronald Opus. He was the one who had loaded. And he was waiting when both of them would fight. Many weeks passed, many months passed. The gun was loaded, but there was no fight between father and mother. And there was no pocket money for him. Whatever little money he had bought those bullets and put in the gun. So he was waiting for so long, and out of frustration that day he went on the terrace to jump off from the terrace to kill himself. And as you know, he was taking some time, it's not so easy to kill yourself. So he was like kind of 1 hour he was waiting. Should I not? Like that. For 1 hour he was waiting upon the terrace, and during that 1 hour of his waiting upon the terrace, the war began. Bhagavad Gita was spoken and the war began on the 19th floor. And then the husband picked up the gandiva, the revolver. And that was the time when he was jumping off from the terrace. And then the bullet coincided and hit the head of this Mr. Ronald Opus. And he, who was supposed to die, according to the destiny, if we take, he was supposed to die because he jumped from the terrace. And then, because of the safety net, he was destined to be saved. Change again of destiny. But again the destiny changed and he was found dead even on the safety net in spite of he falling from the terrace. So the FBI, you know, they closed the files concluding saying that finally Mr. Ronald Opus committed suicide. Because he was the one who loaded the gun and he was the one who jumped from that terrace and he was the one who was shot. Others were just instrumental in facilitators, as we would call the better word. They just became facilitators in his suicide. They made sure, the father made sure, beta, you won't survive. You do not know there is a safety net, but I know how to make your suicide attempt successful. So herein, with this particular, you know, slogan which we have, not all luck is good and not all good is luck. Lots of people confuse bad management with their destiny. That we are not able to manage our life properly, and then again the game starts, the blame game starts. Destiny, providence. Are mere naseeb mein likha hai. Takdeer, naseeb, bhagya. All these things, you know, these are the words which many times people, they do not use so much. But when untoward things starts happening, you know, then these words are, they become like the real big words in people's life. So therefore, when we are simply talking about mismanagement or bad management or poor management, we have 6 steps today to discuss how to manage our destiny. So we'll go one by one. First is taking complete responsibility of one's life. Second is courage to change. Third, getting out of our comfort zone, building a solid set of values, building protective shields, getting a life education. Not simply education, but a life education. Is it clear enough? You are all able to see? Okay. So, well, many of these points we might have heard, we might have read, but over here we'll be discussing these points, or maybe these points we want to have in our life, like taking responsibility of our life, having the courage to change, coming out of our comfort zone. We want all these things. Yes or no? Just making sure that we are all awake still. So we want these things, but many times, you know, the conundrum in our life, the rigmarole which we are in, it appears that I just want to breathe. I just want to live. Forget about, my God, 6 points, 6 steps. Darwaja kahan hai? So many times, you know, just when it comes to these numbers, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Already, you know, so many numbers. When I go to college, there are numbers. When I go to my office, there are deadlines and numbers. My salary also numbered. Less number. I wanted, you know, more zeros. So what happens is that these are some tips. Of course, we'll be trying to understand these particular tips in a way that would be practical for us to apply, not simply just go through for the sake of information. So mind, we are not sitting over here to just get informed about certain tips which might help manage our destiny. We are over here that, yes, you know what is the, just like people when they go to a restaurant, they give tip. Give tips. You know, it's an acronym. T-I-P-S. You know what does that mean? To improve prompt service. So, when we are talking about just some 6 tips, yes, it should improve our life. So, as we walk out of this room, yes, we should have something in our hands, not simply these lines, but something more than these lines, which would help control our destiny. So try to understand these points in regards to implementing them, in regards to bringing about a transformation, not simply some information. So when we talk about the first one, taking responsibility of our own life, let's break the word first. Response plus ability. Which means all of us sitting in this room and all of us not sitting in this room. We all have, all human beings for that matter, we all have an ability to respond. To respond to what? To respond to people. To respond to situations. To respond to circumstances. To respond to a certain time in our life. We all have the ability. Like, to just give you a very crude example, you go out on the street. You go out on the street and, you know, just keep staring at someone. There'll be some response. Kya? Kya chahiye? Kya? Kya ghur raha hai? Like that. Like, you know, one time we were sitting in a train and there was a gentleman sitting, you know, we were like three of us and there was a gentleman sitting in front of us and he was like constantly staring at, you know, the one who was next to me. So, you know, he told me, yaar ye ghoor ke kyun dekh raha hai mere ko? So I said, pooch ke dekh na. So, you know, like he looked here and there and, you know, then again from the corner of the, again he was staring at me. Had ho gaya yaar, puri train mein aur koi dikh hi nahi raha kaise. So he was, you know, checking out his wallet, sab hai na, theek. Purse wagara sab paise theek. And finally, after an hour of this confrontation in his mind, why this guy is staring at me like that? Actually, he was a blind man. And he was like, you know, sitting. But, you know, sometimes some blind people, you know, you can't make out whether they have some defect in their eyes. So he was, you know, he was not looking at anyone because he was blind. So, when we are talking about ability to respond, we all have ability to respond. Now, generally what happens is, as herein we can see, that These are some of the things which we respond to every day. Oh, sorry. Computer is not responding to me. Okay, so herein we have eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And you see, you might not be able to see very clearly those little images, but what those images are showing, animals engaged in eating and human beings engaged in eating and the rest of the three. So you all agree that we respond to these four activities and the animals also do respond to these four activities every day. We respond and they also respond. Is it the same? The way we respond and the way they respond? Is there a difference or is it same? Okay, how many of you feel that there is a difference? Why? And what is the difference? Quite natural for animals to respond. I'm not able to hear you. Yeah. Loudly. Mind. So the animals, they respond mindlessly. Okay. Yes. Yes, when we eat, we can think what we are eating, why we are eating. We are supposed to think. No, no, we are talking about just these four activities. Yeah. No, no. I'm not talking about what we do after eating. I just want to know, when it comes to these four activities, let's stick to these four activities. When it comes to these four activities, the animals, they respond, we also respond. My question is it the same or is there any difference?
There is a difference because animals go for hunting. Even we can go for hunting if we have
basic instinct. We also go for hunting. A man going to the office is hunting. Hunting for the money. Okay, the brutal, literal way. Human beings have a better ability to manage these four, to respond to these four. Okay, okay, one by one. Yeah. Many people are responding. Ah, yes, please. Okay, animals, they simply, as she said, basic instinct, they just work instinctively or impulsively. But human beings, we have brain. You know something? If you go in front of a tiger after his lunch, we should not go? What will happen? Yes. He won't. He won't do that. He won't pounce upon us. Even if you go and ask him, how are you? Like, slap him and do. Of course, not that. So, but what about the human being? Human being, even after having full meal, lunch, चलो थोड़ा पान खाते हैं मुखवास एक सिगरेट हो जाए सॉफ्ट ड्रिंक हो जाए हार्ड ड्रिंक हो जाए मिडल का हो जाए You see, yes, you are right that we are supposed to use our brain when it comes to eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But we find that most of the human beings, they suffer because of so many diseases because of not having control over their eating, sleeping, mating and defending. People nowadays are dying more of overeating than undereating. You know that? So, when we are talking about ability to respond, yes, you are all very optimistic about we human beings. When you say that we are supposed to respond in a way which is sensible, cultured, as we are called the rational animals. Social animals. Yes, we are animals. Sorry to say that. But social animals. We have that rationality. We can discriminate. Supposed to discriminate between right and wrong. And respond accordingly. So herein, when we are talking about that, if these basic things, which we are not able to, if we try to look into our own lives, am I really responding to my eating, sleeping, mating and defending in a cultured way, in a civilized way? Even if the human society responds to these four things in a civilized, cultured way, the world would be a much better place to live, my dear friends. Much better place. The global warming is happening not because of the birds flying in the sky. Why? Who is the cause? We. Again, so many different establishments and industries and corporations which we have built, civilizations. And many of those things are not required for our survival. They are meant for our aggrandizement and sense gratification. For that reason. Of course, I don't want to go into details of that. But beginning with, that if we begin with how to respond in a civilized way with these carnal things in our life, then we are beginning to take the responsibility of our own life. Going further into this, this was a nice quote which I found. On the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers. Drivers wanted. You know Volkswagen, that car company? So they made this quote. Many times what happens is we simply want to remain as passengers. Let someone else drive the car. Let me have a chauffeur. He also said very aptly, the people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for circumstances they want. And if they can't find them, they make them. G.B. Shaw. Many times we see what happens is that we live someone else's life. We dress because someone else dresses like that. Like, you know, many times when I come like this in this dress to give a seminar, so people generally, the first question which comes up, hey, what kind of dress is this? And sometimes, you know, when I'm walking and all that, so they feel, right, na? Because many times, you know, people are used to having a certain kind of dress, and this is not a very usual dress for a seminary, a person who is giving out a seminar. So one person, you know, he just asked me, why you wear this dhoti? Why? So I said, comfortable. It's comfortable. Now many times if you ask someone, why you wear whatever you wear, even if it is scorching heat, you know, in India, it's a tropical country, so many times it's very hot. Even if it is hot, where person is sweating, tie. You know what the tie is meant for? it was in the Western countries, and people started, why they started using, because it was, all those Western countries are so cold because of the cold winds, and it would enter, you know, their system from here in the collar, and it would, you know, they would get cough and cold and all that. For that reason, you know, that thing was used. So now you find in Bombay, local train, you know, he's hanging, just about to fall, collapse, hang till death. He's hanging in the local train and he's sweating, but full tie, you know, like that. And it's like a noose, you know, and a person is, kya bolte, phanda, phansi ka phanda. So many times, if you look into the kind of lifestyle which people are living, it is borrowed from someone else. You watch on the screen, the TV. Oh, my favorite actor and actress is dressing like that. Let me also try. This is the hairstyle nowadays. This is the dress style nowadays, fashion nowadays. So let me try this and that. So what happens is, as herein he says, that we have a borrowed life many times. And we try to look into, am I living my own life? Am I having the responsibility of my own life? Or am I just imitating someone else's life? And that too not properly. Like there was one friend of mine from Canada. He came for one college program in Bombay. And he said, now, he was again, you know, like a Hare Krishna, now a devotee dressed up. And he said to the students that, you know, when I see all of you trying to imitate the Western culture, the Western civilization and the lifestyle, he said, I feel pity. Because I have gone through all that. You know, as they say that, been there, done it all. So he said, I've been there and done it all. But when I see at all of you, first of all, you can't even imitate us properly. You're trying to, but you're miserably failing. Sorry to say, he said. And you're losing your own culture and you're not getting hold of this culture also. So, you know, dhobi ka kutta, na idhar ka na udhar ka, something like that. So this is something very important for us to know, that am I living my own life? Am I really knowing who am I, or am I just someone else's personality dumped on me? That's an important question to first find out in order to take responsibility of one's own life. Now these are some of the things. It's the circle of no control. The color of our skin. No matter how much cream you try to apply. In Bombay some couple of years ago there was this advertisement. Men's fairness cream. It came fair and lovely. Or it was something different? Something like that. Okay, fair and handsome. Now, you know, if you go in America, one person, you know, I was talking to one person and he looked at me, he said, wow, what a tan you have, man. You know, tan? This kind of color. So I said, in India, people want to become fair like you. Eh, fair like us? We want to become tan like you. So it's like, you know, actually, it is said that, you know, when God was cooking the human society, so then there were some people who were overcooked. Some people were undercooked and they went to the American, European countries. And some were rightly cooked, born in India. Mera Bharat. So, you know, when we are talking about, say, color of skin, place of birth, you can't go and change that now. You know, that, oh, I want to change the place of my birth. Well, you have to wait for the next life maybe. Past mistakes, weather, that, you know, it's raining and somehow you shout at the clouds, stop it. like there was floods here some days ago. So this is called the circle of no control. So what happens when we deal with the circle of no control? Should we become depressed in stress and anxiety? So many times we take it, okay, circle of no control, it's beyond my control. But then inside that, there is circle of control, which we can draw. The circle of no control, yes, it might be drawn by someone else or maybe providence or destiny, whatever you may call it. But the circle of control around me, I can draw myself. And what that circle of control comprises of? My choices, again responses and attitudes. So yes, whatever the past things have happened, the way you look at that then, that's attitude again. Therefore it is said, it's one's attitude, not aptitude, which decides one's altitude. Like there was a dying husband, he was on the deathbed. And the wife was beside him. So the dying husband is looking into holding the hands of the wife and telling to the wife, "My dear honey, you remember 30 years ago when I was thrown out of my job, you were by my side like this, holding my hand." She said, "Yes, I remember, my dear." Then he said, "And you remember when I met with that deadly accident, I was admitted in the hospital for 6 months. Again, you were by my side, holding my hand." She said, "Yes, I remember that also very distinctly. And now I am in this terminal disease, about to die. You are again by my side, holding my hand." She said, "Yes, I can definitely see this." And then he said, "So my dear, in my ultimate analysis of my life, I have understood that whenever you were by my side, now till that point of time, it appeared as if it was a very loving conversation, as if, you know, the husband was feeling so grateful for whatever the wife, you know, by the side, holding the hands like that." Again, attitude, how you look at that. So, that is within our jurisdiction. Like, you chose to come here. Hopefully. It was your choice. That yes, okay, someone told you that there is a seminar entitled like this. Okay, let me try out. Let me see. Let's check out what these Hare Krishnas are up to. So you chose. And now, when you are over here, your choice again will be decided according to the attitude which you cultivate. Sitting over here, many of you might have different attitudes now encountering this seminar. Some of you might be thinking,
"Kab khatam karega yaar?"
And some of you might be thinking, "Looks little interesting. At least I'm awake." So there might be different kinds of approaches which you might have. And as it's not that you can't change that attitude. You can change that attitude also, depending on the responses, depending on the choices which you all make. So therefore, that is that circle which we have to focus upon. The circle of control. Now, there are two kinds of people. Let's begin with the first one. The reactive one. Just the word itself is self-explanatory. Reactive person means that any given situation, he just bottles out. He reacts to it. Like for example, let's take the other one also. Then we'll take the example. The other is the opposite of that, proactive. Now I'll give you a typical example of a reactive person. I am, you know, moving this laptop to the edge of the table, and a reactive person will watch. And then when the laptop will fall off, hey, gir gaya. Then he will react. Kya malum nahi tha kya wo hawa mein udne wala hai kya, take off le raha tha kya. Or if, you know, there is a glass of water kept, you know, edge of this table here. So proactive person will keep it somewhere in the center or keep it somewhere else. That's a proactive person. Reactive person will look at that. Either nahi hona chahiye. But he will not do anything. Jab wo gir jayega, main bola tha nahi hona chahiye. So a reactive person, you know, he's like a soda bottle. Shake it. You see the reaction. And a proactive person is like bisleri water. Kitna bhi hilao, pani bahar nahi aayega. It won't fizz out because there is no gas in that. So that's the difference between a reactive person and a proactive person. So then we have to see that, how am I responding to situations in my life? Am I just sitting back like a spectator and then something happens and then I react to that, jump out from my seat? Or am I proactive? That I beforehand think 5 steps ahead, what's going to happen? And then improve my steps right now, the first one. So therefore, when we are talking about circle of control, we are talking about being proactive rather than just reacting to situations of this world. That's how we take responsibility. Now this is something very interesting. Balancing between our past and our future. Definitely we all have lived our past. And definitely there is future awaiting ahead of all of us. You believe in that? There is future awaiting for all of us? Now this is something interesting. That the month January, it comes from this Latin word genus. Anyone knows? What does that mean? This is the name of a Roman god. This is how they picturize this Roman god. And it essentially means that January is the month which can look into December and can look into February. So this Roman god of beginnings and endings is named Genus, and from that the month has been named January. So in the month of January, many times, you know, when we are in that month, we think, you know, 31st December I had taken this resolution that I will not smoke. There was one smoker, and he read one quote which said, think before you smoke. And he said, I need a cigarette to think. So, you know, when we take these resolutions in the month of December, yes, the coming year, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then few weeks of the month of January passes, then we look back. December, it was that day when I had taken those resolutions which turn into dissolutions now. And from there you can look into the month of February also. So therefore, what this signifies is that what we learn just from that particular month or this Roman god named Genesis, that how we have to balance between our past. Learn from the month of December so that you can improve the February. That's what it says. Learning from the past. Therefore it is said that past was history. Future is a mystery. It is now which God has given us as a gift. Therefore it is called present. Present means? It means it has dual meanings. It means gift also. It means right now, the present tense. So therefore, when we are balancing between our past and future, that is how we have to look into taking responsibility of our life, the circle of control, that yes, I can't go into the past and change the past. I can't go into the future and manipulate the future. What I can do is learn from the past so that my future is bright. Then we go to the second one, courage to change. Do you all have the courage? We all have to develop that courage to bring about a change. It is said that if you keep doing the same things again and again and again and expect a new result, that's called stupidity. So, just one word, stupidity means keep doing the same things again and again and expect new results to come. You must have heard this quote, practice makes a man? No. Perfect practice makes a man perfect. Simply practicing doesn't make a man perfect. It has to be perfect practice. Then. So, when we talk about courage to change, a nice quote again. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change. Courage to change those things I can. And wisdom to know the difference. So yes, definitely when we talk about the circle of no control, those are the things which we can't change. Yes. But definitely there are things which are there in our control. We should first develop the courage to bring about a change in that. Now the name of the game in the present modernistic society, or rather call it the hedonistic society, it says, every morning in Africa, a lion wakes up to know it must outrun the slowest stag or it'll starve. Every morning in Africa, a stag wakes up to know it must outrun the fastest lion or it'll be killed. So it appears to be like a dichotomy. Well, the lion is waking up in order to catch its prey. And the stag is waking up to outrun the fastest lion. So therefore, what is the name of the game? It doesn't matter whether you are a lion or a stag. When the sun comes up, you better be running. And therefore, nowadays, it is survival of the fastest. If Darwin would have been now, you know, Darwin said that, survival of the fittest. Nowadays, you have to be fastest in order to just survive. Like, you know, I always remember this one anecdote in this regard, that there were two friends and they went hunting in a forest excursion. And then, you know, they spotted a cheetah. Interesting, huh? They spotted a cheetah. But more interesting was the cheetah spotted them. That's something more interesting now. So the cheetah spotted them and the cheetah started chasing. So one of them, what he did, he removed his backpack and started removing his running shoes. And the other friend asked, you think you will be able to outrun this cheetah? Just putting on your running shoes? He said, no. I want to outrun you because he needs one of us. So this is, in this world of dog eat dog world, I step on your head to climb the ladder of my success. And the step is your head. You know, the rung of the ladder, all the heads. And then I reach the success. But first of all, do we know that the ladder is on the right wall? People are so busy climbing the ladder of success. But seldom do they know whether the ladder is leaning on the right wall. So whether the success which I am trying to achieve, am I simply running in that rat race and simply becoming a good rat, number one rat, winning the rat race? Or am I really going beyond that, having the courage to bring about that change? What are the patent excuses which we use not to bring about that change in our life? These are some very, very common patent excuses. It might sound familiar. I have always done it my way. I have never done it your way. Immediately. Then, that's not my job. I don't think it will make any difference. And this is the most common one. Come on, I'm too busy, man. Too busy for what? It's like, a woodcutter who is cutting the wood and his axe has gone blunt. And then someone comes and says, better you sharpen your axe. Mind your business. I'm too busy. So yes, taking out time to sharpen that axe might not directly connect to the cutting of the tree. But is it worth taking out time to sharpen the axe? Which means he is doing something which he is not used to, maybe accustomed to. So therefore, when we are talking about getting that courage to bring about that change in our life, let's try to first delve into these patent excuses and see whether I'm trying to come out of these excuses and not give these excuses, or using something else to come out from that zone. Then the third is getting out of our comfort zone. Both of them are interrelated. Courage to change and getting out of the comfort zone. What is the comfort zone? Like, we all have our own comfort zones. My habits, my attitudes, my choices, my idiosyncrasies, my little family, my house, my world, my civilization, my empire. And how dare you ask me to step out of that? You know, it's so comfortable and cozy. So when we are talking about the comfort zone, very nicely said, you can't make footprints in the sands of time by sitting on your butt. And who wants to leave butt prints in the sands of time? One of the few things that can't be recycled is wasted time in our comfort zone. Sometimes to change means you may have to step out 3 million light years outside of your comfort zone. That much how far sometimes we have to go. So we think that my comfort zone is so comfortable that I'm getting this peace. It's a very nice comparison that our comfort zone, or getting off our comfort zone, is like trying an entirely new cuisine. So, if I tell you that tonight, I want to offer you something very tasty. It is so succulent. It is so palatable. It is so tasty. It is so delicious. It's called baklava. only 1000 rupees a plate. Baklava. Want to have? Halwa suna tha, ye baklava kya hota hai? So, you know, when a cuisine, it's actually name of, you know, a sweet item, not an Indian sweet. Why I remembered that? Because in America, one person, you know, he made that baklava for some of us. And he said, today, you know, we have made baklava. And everyone, wow! And we were... everyone was saying, wow! And we said, what? So, you know, if somebody comes and says, today for dinner, it's misal pav. अभी कुछ ढंग की बात बोली. सो इमेजिन यू नो इफ यू हैव टू कन्विंस समवन अबाउट एन एंटायरली न्यू क्यूजीन. इमेजिन यू आर गिविंग अ सेमिनार द ग्लोरीज ऑफ रसगुल्ला. देयर इज अ सेमिनार विच यू आर सपोज टू गिव ग्लोरीज ऑफ रसगुल्ला बट नॉट टू बेंगालीज नॉट टू इंडियंस. You are giving a seminar on the glories of Rasgulla to some African cannibals. You know what a cannibal is? Man-eater. In Africa, some places also, other parts of the world, there are these man-eating human beings. They eat human beings. They are called cannibals. So imagine, cannibals are sitting. And you have a PowerPoint presentation, glories of Rasgulla. And you are showing, you know, different images of, and you look at everyone. So this is called Rasgulla. It's Gulla with Ras. And it's, you know, spherical in shape. And it's... Thank you for that input. It's spongy. It's, you know. It's yummy. It's sweet. It's very watery, succulent. So as you are talking about the Rasgulla, showing everything to these cannibals, you think the cannibals are looking at the screen? They are looking at you. Spongy. Very spongy. So, trying to get off our comfort zone many times, it's like trying to, you know, convince ourselves for something like a new cuisine which we have never encountered maybe in our life. Then, rest in peace. So, what is this? It's a coffin. Huh? Sure? Yeah. It's a coffin. Which means who is inside? Dead body. Resting in peace. So, herein, comfort zone becomes like this, you know. Quite comfortable. But just, you know, a little change, we try to understand, it becomes also quietly comfortable. Sorry. Yeah. You know, what does that mean then? The dead body is very quiet, calmly sleeping inside. You know these, you know who the undertakers are? In India, you won't hear about these undertakers. In the West, undertakers are those people, they make prior arrangements for funeral to the extent that they decorate the dead bodies. The dead bodies are decorated. You know, the undertakers, they will dress up the dead body with three-piece suit. And they will spray, you know, different perfumes and apply lotions and creams and, you know, give a hairstyle also. If in case he doesn't have any hair. So they put a wig and give a hairstyle. And at the end, there is a smile, a plastic smile given to the dead body. So when everyone comes, you know, to the funeral ceremony, they look at, haste hue ja raha hai. So, our comfort zone many times becomes like our own coffin. A coffin is very comfortable, but for whom? For a dead body. So if the comfort zone is making us quite comfortable, then we simply remain a quite calm dead body within that comfort zone. Quietly comfortable in that case. So therefore, in order to have a life full of life, we have to come out of the comfort zones herein as it is compared to the coffin. Now this is something very interesting. Hitting the nail right. And this is another anecdote of a kingdom which was fighting a war. So herein, it said that for want of a nail, the horseshoe was lost. You know, horses, they have to have the horseshoes in order to gallop, in order to run, in order to be used in the battle. So for want of a nail, the horseshoe was lost. For want of the horseshoe, the horse was lost. For want of the horse, the soldier was lost. The battle was lost. For want of the battle, the kingdom was lost. And it was all for want of a horseshoe nail. It appears to be so insignificant. You know, something which you might not give a medal to a horseshoe nail if the battle is won by that kingdom. But something so insignificant but not taken care of, if taken care, can bring about such big difference. Like the American Airlines, they were facing, you know, they were undergoing loss. And then they found out that what they can do to improve upon in order to come out of that loss which they were incurring. You know what they did? They were serving out salad. Every flight they were serving out salad along with the meal. So they decided that in the salad, they will remove one olive. They will give one olive less. You know, they put olives in the salads there in America. So they decided that, you know, everything was numbered, that how many olives each meal of the, you know, the salad in and the meal would have. So they decided that they will remove one olive from each plate. And in a year's time, they saved $40,000 just removing one olive from the salad plate. So herein we can see that how a little difference brought about. So sometimes in our life also, when we have to bring about that change or come out of the comfort zone, we have to begin with those minuscule changes. And then we see that what the difference will be in the big picture, in the long run, at the conclusion, the destination point. So herein, then we are talking about the comfort zone, and then over that is the courage zone, which is also so big enough. And therefore, when we focus on the courage zone, then we realize that how small is the circle of our comfort zone. And how vast is the courage zone wherein I can enter into and I can improve upon my life, getting that courage to change them. Now, when we are talking about these two zones, these are again some of the characteristics. The comfort zone, things I enjoy doing, safety and security, relaxation and ease, freedom from risk, things I am accustomed to. When it comes to getting that courage, things I am afraid of, things I have never tried, unexplored territories, things that are difficult, fear of public opinion. Duniya kya bolegi? What will the world say? So, herein, when we are in confrontation between the comfort and the courage zone, we try to analyze, but we analyze with the wrong attitude. And we analyze having the wrong role models for that. Like if you have a proper role model, many of the role models who are successful now, if you look into that, how they became successful, like, you know, say some people talk so much about Abraham Lincoln that, you know, he was unsuccessful in so many different phases of his life. And finally, you know, he became Abraham Lincoln. So, like one father was telling to his son, he told to his son that, what are you doing? You are 20 years old. You know, Abraham Lincoln, when he was 20 years old, he was already earning a fortune for his family. Aur tum nithalla? So the son told to the father, when Abraham
better to get a stiff neck from aiming too high than a hunchback from aiming too low. Which is better or which is worse? Again, it depends on how you look at that. As I was speaking yesterday, that we should try to catch the stars. Even if you are not able to catch the stars, can take us to the top of life that keeps us there. And many times, it's not that we have to prove to the world with a character certificate that yes, I'm having some solid set of values in my life, I'm a person full of character. Like, there's this life that's in the life of Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi was born at the age, and he was very close to the slippers. Trying to hold that train, one of the slippers fell in between the tracks. In between the tracks of the train and the track. And the train stopped. So, he had only one slipper now. So, what he did, he removed that slipper and he threw that again in that track. And then he was asked why he did that. He said, anyway, I can't use it. So, whoever will find that one slipper, will also be miserable like this. So again, when we are talking about having some values and principles, it has to be implemented. It should not be just bookish. It should not be that we are simply talking about values and character to others. Within comes without you make anything back. What is the use of a pencil without the lead coming out of it, coming out of the wooden portion? For that within to come without, the process will be extremely painful. That's the process of sharpening. Only when you are in the hands of a copywriter can you come to your wherever you go. Even if you commit mistakes, it can be delayed and also changed. We are trying to understand our real valuable aspects from within us. We can just learn some simple lessons from offensive. But our real value lies within us, the character, our attitudes, our responses to it. And only when that within comes to God, can we get the impact. But for that, to come without, the process will be very painful. Then, only when we put ourselves in the hands of a proper writer, yes, we make a person a proper guide in our life, then we can be of control. And of course, whatever we do, we will mark like for the person, but even if we come to the state, it can be erased and re-written. Therefore, it says that it's what inside that comes. Containers that is content, conditions of the consciousness. So that we simply are very much enamored and impressed by the container, not knowing what the content is all about. So the content is more important than the container. And similarly, it's the consciousness more important than just the condition of the person, the physical condition. And here is, there were three boys who wanted to buy some balloons. So there was one boy who bought a blue balloon. Why said no? Because the boy thought it's the color of the balloon which makes the balloon go up. But it's not the color. It's deep. It's the medium inside. It's the content which makes the balloon go up. So therefore, when we are talking about building product set values, we have to, this is something very interesting that we have to evaluate before we come to conclusions and become judgmental. So this is something very interesting which I found. You have to become bold, but not worried. You have to have humility, but not stupidity. Confident, but not confusion. Tender, but not weak. Strong, but not arrogant. Firm, but not stubborn. Cool, but not cold. Content, but not complacent. Detached, but not indifferent. Wise. It appears that many times there is a very thin line between
whatever facts and figures as a weekly edition of newspaper is given. A one-page newspaper advertisement can sell a bottle of shampoo, don't you think? A full-length movie or a magazine can sell a lifestyle? Just a silly bottle of shampoo a person can buy with just a few seconds of that commercial. So then when people watch full-length movie and the lifestyle which is being shown, so people become so absorbed, engrossed, and then they start to emulate, they start to copy that, xerox that particular lifestyle within their own lifestyle. And therefore, we have to be very careful that what kind of shields we are keeping in front, whether it's protecting us or whether it's killing us. As herein, the effect of media. This boy is looking at what? What is the boy looking at? TV? Or the moon? The moon in the TV. But the boy is asking, Papa, what is the moon supposed to advertise? So which means, for him, even a natural phenomena like a full moon is supposed to advertise something. So then what happens is that from without, instead of building some protective shields which would help us from within, it is simply building another wall of that comfort zone which is destroying us. And this is another nice incident from the life of King Louis the 16th of France, that when he was dethroned by the rebels, and what they did was that they didn't just dethrone him, King Louis the 16th, but they kidnapped the prince also, because they wanted that after the king, the prince also should not take over. So they kidnapped the prince, and to the prince what they did was that they started to feed him, you know, substandard food to make him slave of his appetite, so that he should become so degraded, you know, he was put, you know, in the association of lewd and lusty women, so that, you know, he becomes slave of his passion and lust. And very vile and foul, filthy language was used. So all this while, the whole attempt by these dethroners was to just demoralize the prince and make the prince fall from his princely stature. But at the end, it so happened that that young lad, he wouldn't buckle to the pressure which was given to him. He came out unscathed after all that ordeal which he had to go through. So then they were all surprised, these rebels were all surprised, and they then asked the prince, how come we tried our level best using all that foul language, feeding you all that kind of food, and, you know, putting forth in front of you all those kind of things and allurements and enticements? Why? Why you couldn't get affected by that? So I always like the answer which the prince gave to these rebels. He said, I was born to be a king. A very profound man. It's just one statement he made. I was born to be a king. So when we also have that conviction, yes, I am born to be a man of honor. I am born to be a man of principles. I am born to be a king of my own kingdom. And what's my own kingdom? My own life. When we have that conviction and we live with that based on those principles, yes, nothing of this world from without can shake us, as this happened with the prince. Then, herein we see that instead of, you know, herein as it says, we have many Indians staying abroad and people are very much planning to become NRIs. But we find that many of us are becoming resident non-Indians, residing in India, but becoming so much affected by the media and that kind of lifestyle that we don't have to go anywhere outside of India. We have found our own little American empire or European empire or the Western empire around us. And at the end, getting a life education. It's better to be uneducated than ill-educated. If you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Wisdom comes from living, not just studying. Too many people have tried to get a lifestyle instead of a life. Herein, when we are talking about life education, you see, simply getting a degree doesn't mean that we have become intelligent. There is a difference between having intelligence, having proper, rightful intelligence, and simply having some pieces of paper showing to others that, yes, this is what, you know, my worth is in this world. Not just some degrees or some alphabets after my name on the nameplate. So therefore, when we are talking about life education, we are talking about not simply some facts and figures and some information in our life. We are talking about those things, that education, which brings about a transformation. That yes, I can become a person who at least brings about a change within myself and whoever comes in contact with myself. That's called life education. And therefore, we have to look into that in order to change my destiny, I have to depend on this transformation of my life and put that litmus test to ourselves whether that's happening. Whoever I'm encountering, the place, time and circumstance, whether after that, am I positively getting transformed or am I in a position to help that place, time and circumstance to get some kind of transformation. And that's called the life education program. So for that we have to examine, diagnose and prescribe. Now these terms appear to be medical terms. Now definitely if we consider that we are in a diseased condition, which means there is no ease. Disease means no ease, dis-ease. So for that we have to examine what that disease is, and after examining then we have to diagnose it and then of course prescribe. But then it doesn't stop there. After giving the prescription, taking the medicine. Simply having the prescription but not taking the medicine again shall not fulfill the worth of that. Therefore it should teach us many things. The first is, yes, people talk about so much. Yes, we should have the willpower. Where there is a will, there is a way. There is another twist to this. Nowadays people say, where there is a will, there are many relatives. You know, when they write the will. So, having the willpower, but along with that, we should also have the want power. You might have heard about the willpower, but what is the want power? Yes, I won't get into the wrong practices. I won't get into the wrong habits. I won't get into, again, my uncomfortable zone of my comfort zone, which is making me uncomfortable. So the want power also should be equally fed as we try to feed the willpower. And therefore, for that we have to simplify our life. Which means, just be honest to ourselves. And that's how it is as simple as that. Simple for the simple. This is a very interesting quote which we were taught during our training sessions in the defense. The more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. Yes, this might be the peacetime going on, that there might not be catastrophes, calamities, in our life. But that is the time when we have to work upon, sweat it out, so that when those situations come in our life, we are strong enough, fortified enough to face, and therefore we bleed less. So it's a very interesting quote which will help us for our life education. To conclude with, destiny is sometimes jewel and sometimes cruel. When it is jewel, wear it with all humility. When it is cruel, bear it with all ability. Therefore, I did use this quote in the beginning, because after building all protective shields and coming out of our comfort zone, entering into the courage zone and all that, then we have the ability to face and bear the cruel destiny. And therefore, just a brief recap of what we discussed, just so that, again, it should not happen that there was a load of information which was dumped on me, and finally, as I walk out, if somebody is asking, so kaisa tha seminar? Kuch to bol raha tha. So therefore, just, you know, before we part, taking complete responsibility of one's life, courage to change, getting out of our comfort zone, building a solid set of values, building protective shields, getting a life education. Again, it is said, control your destiny, it's in your hands or someone else's. So by, again, you know, it's like, you know, my tennis coach told me, he told me that I can teach you how to hold the racket, I can teach you how to hit the ball, but you have to do it. You have to do it when the racket is in your hand and the ball is in front of you. So yes, we can act like a coach or a trainer, but ultimately we have to sit in the cockpit and fly our own plane. And therefore, yes, these tips can help us to manage and improve. And definitely, that was the sole motive, that all those tips which we discussed should help us improve and let us implement in our life, so that we can manage our own individual destinies and also the destiny of the society at large. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Anyone has any questions, any queries, doubts? Or whatever we discussed, or anything in relation to these kind of subject matter, you can ask. Ladies first. How to be detached without being indifferent? A very nice question. How to be detached without becoming indifferent to it. You see, Krishna, he speaks about detachment in the Bhagavad Gita when he says that a self-realized soul within this material world is like a lotus leaf. If you have seen a lotus leaf, the lotus leaf is very much connected to the muddy water. But nothing of that muddy water can affect the lotus leaf. Why? Because the lotus leaf has that waxy surface. No matter how much amount of water you pour on that lotus leaf, it glides out. So Krishna says, Padma Patram Imam Bhasa, that living within this material world, but not getting affected like that lotus leaf. So when we are talking about detachment, detachment has to be clubbed with proper attachment. It has to be clubbed with proper attachment. Simply life of detachment is an illusion. Nobody can just live a life of simply detachment. In order to become detached, one has to have proper attachment, and that has to be simultaneously. And that takes care that we do not become indifferent. Like for example, if a child is very mischievous, in order to stop the mischief of the child, if the child is very mischievous because of some toy, so what the parents they do is that they distract the child by giving the child some then he leaves the toy. But he will leave the toy only when there is allurement for the ice cream. So that detachment towards the toy is taking place because of the attachment towards something else. So therefore, this word detachment appears to be very scary sometimes. In order to become a person, a principled person, or a person full of values, I have to be detached. Which means, detached means I have to just cut off from the society. No. If you are holding something which is not, you are not supposed to hold it, in order to give that up, hold something else. Look for something else to hold in your palm. And automatically, you won't have to force yourself to become detached from it. Automatically, that thing will replace it. And then, you won't be blamed of being indifferent to whatever you have detached yourself from this world. So having, just like, you know, somebody who passes SSC, from that he goes to college. So somebody says, hey, you detached yourself from school. But I got attached to the college. If you are not attached to the college, then definitely, simply matriculate, you know, detached from that. So therefore, that's how, again, we have to positively understand the proper definition of detachment. You had a question.
How the luck factor affects?
Sorry?
How the luck factor, people say luck factor is there.
Luck factor.
Yeah. And destiny, what we have just heard about.
You see, if you remember that particular slide which we showed, that we have that particular circle of control. In that circle of control, choices, responses and attitudes. So, whatever choices we make, our desire will make sure what do we do. You can't do something before you desire it. So it becomes, and you will desire depending on your choice and your attitude and your lifestyle. So it's all interdependent. What we desire makes our lifestyle, and our lifestyle helps for us to desire properly. So whatever we desire, that, you know, as they say, that check your thoughts, thoughts will turn into words, words will turn into actions, and actions will then become your destiny. So it all begins with desire, the thoughts. And therefore, when you come in an association like that, this association helps you to think better, to desire better, what to desire, how to desire. And then, with that association, when you start desiring in the right way, in the right direction, that will help your work, your activity. And that activity will help. And that will become what people call it, say, the luck or the destiny. So in that sense, yes, what we started off, man is the maker and the breaker of his destiny, depending on what choices you make. So right now, if in case, you know, you do a headstand, you know, Shirsasana, and you do not know how to do that. So you'll break your neck, or you'll do so many things, you know, you'll harm yourself. So it was your choice that you did something like that, and then whatever was the outcome of that, then you can't blame. This example is given that if your teeth, if they bite your tongue, whom are you going to blame? The tongue? The teeth? Or what? Or yourself? So again, it's a very thin line between what we are talking about. But yes, if it's there in the destiny, if it's going to come from whatever my past activities, I can't change that. So yes, then looking into the past and the future, that particular point we have to focus upon. What is the present? Right now, what present good thing I am doing in order to improve myself? And yes, if you are well assured that all of these things which we discussed about, you are taking care of it in your life, then you don't have to be afraid of what's going to come about in regards to your destiny. That's how you control. So thank you all very much. I am very appreciative of this wonderful audience, and I hope it was in our destiny that we encounter each other in this fashion. And to inform you, those of you who have come for the first time, that we have regular sessions here at this particular place, this hall itself, this temple, every Sunday. Like tomorrow, we have the Sunday Love Feast program. That's in the evening, 7:30. In fact, tomorrow we are having a very special guest coming from America, His Grace Vyasaki Prabhu. It's part of the Hare Krishna movement now, but originally from America. He's a very renowned singer also in ISKCON, and also before coming into ISKCON, he was a professional singer and also very good orator. So you are all invited tomorrow for the Sunday Love Feast program, same 7:30 in the evening. Then every Wednesday we have a seminar of this kind, but in Hindi. That's on Bhagavad Gita. We are going verse by verse, understanding the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. That's again in a seminar fashion, every Wednesday evening, same 7:30. And Fridays we have seminars like this kind in English then. So these are the programs which goes on here, and you can become part of any of the programs or all the programs here, and it's all free. So, and of course there is dinner after all of these sessions, so you don't have to worry about that. So you're all invited for those sessions also. And now there will be dinner served out for all of you outside the courtyard. But before that, we'll have just 5 minutes of Hare Krishna Kirtan. We'll have 5 minutes of Hare Krishna Kirtan. If in case anyone has any personal things to get clarified, you can, I'll be here. You can come up to me and personally we can talk it out. Thank you all again very much. Hare Krishna.
जय श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ भगवान की जय। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे। हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे। हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे। हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everyone. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Hari Bol. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, हरिनाम संकीर्तन की शिल प्रभुपाद की निताई गौर प्रेमानंदी
हरे कृष्ण वन मिनट एक्सक्यूज मी प्लीज एट द आउटसेट ऑफ द आउटसाइड ऑफ अवर टेम्पल हॉल वी हैव सेट अप बुक स्टॉल वेयर द वेरियस बुक्स लाइक पॉजिटिव एटीट्यूड एंड सो मेनी थिंग्स स्ट्रेस मैनेजमेंट रिलेटेड एंड बुक्स ऑफ अवर इंस्टीट्यूशन लाइक रिटन बाय अवर फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद दे आर केप्ट आउटसाइड बेस्ड ऑन भगवद गीता एंड वेरियस वेदिक स्क्रिप्चर्स वी कैन गो थ्रू इट एंड यू माइट हैव रिसीव्ड सम फीडबैक स्लिप्स वाइल एंटरिंग टू द हॉल सो यू हैव टू बी श्योर दैट यू फिल इट एंड सबमिट एट द प्रसादम काउंटर सो कैन प्रोसीड फॉर योर डिनर थैंक यू